Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. I'm Sue Supriano, and this Steppin' Out of Babylon show this week is going to be, as last week was, different than usual, because we are going to continue with the speech of Michael C. Rupert. I'm doing this because I think the information is so important for all of us to hear. These shows have been produced by Kelly Ramirez and Bonnie Faulkner for KPFA Radio, and they've been shortened a bit to fit into my time slot here. So listen carefully.
Welcome to Guns and Butter, The Economics of Politics. I'm Kelly Ramirez with Bonnie Faulkner. Guns and Butter investigates the relationships among capitalism, militarism, and politics. Maintaining a progressive perspective in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, Guns and Butter, The Economics of Politics, reports on who wins and who loses when the economic resources of civil society are diverted toward global corporatization, war, and the furtherance of a national security state.
I'm Bonnie Faulkner. Today we're featuring Michael C. Rupert, publisher and editor of From the Wilderness Publications, on The Truth and Lies of 9/11. The following is from a presentation Rupert gave on February 21st in San Francisco.
Now, we're going to get to the heart of the presentation. I want you to put on your most skeptical hats. Here it comes. Here's the case. You're the jury. 1991 through 1997, major U.S. oil companies, including ExxonMobil, Texaco, Unocal, BP, Amoco, and Shell, directly invest $3 billion in cash, bribing the heads of state. That's illegal, by the way. There are two federal grand juries sitting now in Washington and New York City, looking at violations of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. They bribe the heads of state in Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, to secure equity rights in the huge oil reserves in these regions. The oil companies further commit to future direct investment in Kazakhstan of $35 billion cash. That's for almost a decade. They couldn't get their money out. By the way, do you know who sat on the Kazakh government's oil advisory board during all of those years? Dick Cheney. Do you wonder why he's not disclosing the records of his energy task force? The source, by the way, was testimony for the House International Relations Committee and a wonderful article by Cy Hirsch in The New Yorker from last June. Seymour Hirsch. December 4th, 1997, representatives of the Taliban are invited guests to the Texas headquarters of Unocal to negotiate their support for the pipeline. Subsequent reports will indicate that the negotiations failed, allegedly because the Taliban wanted too much money. Source, the British Broadcasting Company, December 4, 1997. 1998, the CIA ignores warnings from case officer Robert Baer that Saudi Arabia was harboring an al-Qaeda cell led by two terrorists. A more detailed list of known terrorists is offered to Saudi intelligence in August 2001 and is refused. Financial Times of London, 112-01, the book See No Evil. 1998 and 2000, former President George Herbert Walker Bush travels to Saudi Arabia on behalf of the privately owned Carlyle Group, the 11th largest defense contractor in the United States. While there, he meets privately with the Saudi royal family and with the Bin Laden family. Personally meets with them. They're major investors in the Carlyle Group, privately owned. Yet it buys all kinds of defense contractors, including some that make vaccines. The source, by the way, is the Wall Street Journal story of September 27, 2001. January 2001, the Bush administration orders the FBI and intelligence agencies to back off investigations involving the Bin Laden family, including two of Osama's cousins, Abdullah and Omar, who are living in Falls Church, Virginia. Falls Church, Virginia is right next to the CIA's headquarters in Langley. We have a direct order to back off investigations of these two relatives who are known connected to a terrorist group, WAMI, the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, and a journalist by the name of Greg Palast, American journalist writing for BBC. Not only does he break the story, he produces an FBI 199 National Security Report, which he shows on television from the complaints of the FBI agents saying the Bush administration told us to leave these guys alone. They're terrorists. February 13th, UPI terrorism correspondent Richard Sale reports on an ongoing criminal case in U.S. District Court in Manhattan. It's against followers of Osama bin Laden. And what he reveals, what he writes is that in the case, the National Security Agency presents evidence that they had broken all of Osama bin Laden's encrypted communications. They were reading all of his codes. They knew every phone conversation. Now, in May 2001, Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage, a drug smuggler all of his adult life from Southeast Asia to Iran-Contra, was convicted, was denied appointments to Secretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan. He is our Deputy Secretary of State right now. Colin Powell called him in the Washington Times in 1995, my white son. Armitage goes to India in May 2001, and while the CIA director, George Tenet, makes a quiet visit to Pakistan to meet with General Pervez Musharraf, our wonderful ally. They say that there is a very long meeting between Tenet and Musharraf. Now remember that by treaty, and for this I have to thank Professor Michel Chosudovsky, a very dear friend and colleague of the University of Ottawa, for pointing out that the head of Pakistani intelligence must be approved by the director of the CIA by treaty. It's a matter of treaty. Okay, so it's reasonable to assume, don't you think, that if the CIA director goes to Pakistan, meets with the head of state, that the head of Pakistani intelligence would be there. Very long meeting. Just remember that. June 2001, German intelligence, the BND, Bundesnachrichtendienst, warns the CIA and Israel that Middle Eastern terrorists are planning to hijack commercial aircraft to use as weapons to attack important symbols of American and Israeli culture. Source, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, September 14, 2001. This is not some random notice. This is one of the best intelligence agencies in the world, the BND, telling the CIA that the terrorists are going to hijack commercial aircraft for suicide missions to attack America. Just that's one piece. July 2001, three American officials, Tom Simmons, Carl Inderfirth, Lee Coldren, all former State Department bigwigs, meet with Pakistani and Russian intelligence officers in Berlin and tell them that the U.S. is planning military strikes against Afghanistan in October. The Taliban is there. We are announcing to the Taliban, we're going to bomb you to pieces in October. And it happens in July. And this is a French book, La Vérité Interdite. But this is reported in The Guardian, great paper in Britain, the BBC, September 18th, and the Interpress Service, November 16th. Very well confirmed. These meetings took place. Can we call that provocation? Yes. Summer 2001, according to September 26th story in Britain's The Guardian, correspondent David Lee reports that the Department of Defense official Jeffrey Starr visited Tajikistan in January. The Guardian's Felicity Lawrence established that U.S. Rangers were training special troops in Kyrgyzstan. We've been preparing for the war for a long time. Pakistani ISI chief General Mahmoud Ahmad, remember that the head of must be approved by the CIA, orders $100,000 wired by an aide directly to Mohammed Atta, the lead hijacker, who was, according to the FBI, the lead terrorist. Ahmad resigned after the transfer was disclosed in India and, get this, confirmed by the FBI. The head of Pakistani intelligence sent $100,000 to the lead hijacker. The Times of India, October 11th, 2001, is where I got the story. No one has challenged, not even the CIA has denied that story. Summer 2001, an Iranian man phones U.S. law enforcement to warn of an imminent attack on the World Trade Center in the week of September the 9th. Now go back. You have the BND saying hijacked airplanes attacking important symbols of American and Israeli cultures. We now know it's the World Trade Center in the week of September 9th. German police confirmed the calls because they were monitoring the calls, but state that the U.S. Secret Service, that means the CIA, that was a translation, would not reveal any further information. Source, the German news agency online, DE. I got a translation from it from the website online, IE, which is in Ireland. June 26, 2001, the magazine IndiaReacts.com states that India and Iran will facilitate U.S. and Russian plans for limited military action against the Taliban. The story indicates that the fighting will be done by U.S. and Russian troops with the help of Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. August 2001, the FBI arrests an Islamic militant linked to bin Laden in Boston. French intelligence sources confirm that the man is a key member of bin Laden's network, and the FBI learns that he has been taking flying lessons. At the time of his arrest, the man is in possession of technical information on Boeing aircraft and flight manuals. Now we know suicide airplanes hijacked, crashed into the World Trade Center the week of September 9th, and we have terrorists located in Boston. Source, Reuters, September 13th. August 11th or 12th, U.S. Navy Lieutenant Delmart Mike Vreeland, who has been in jail in a Toronto jail cell since December of 2000, writes a handwritten warning because he's been screaming to his jailers for a long time, bin Laden's going to attack, there's going to be major terrorist attacks, they didn't listen. On August 11th or 12th, he writes a note, gives it to his jailers and says, seal it away where I can't touch it, I told you this was going to happen. And it was sealed away, I know because I've been to the courtroom in Toronto. I've met with his lawyers, I have a copy of it. In this note, Navy Lieutenant Delmert Mike Vreeland writes, and notice what he says here. This says, Navy Pier, Sears Tower, World Trade Center, White House, Pentagon, World Bank, Water Supplies, Parliament Building in Ottawa, the Royal Bank, Toronto. Then it says right down here, let one happen, stop the rest. Let one happen, stop the rest. That implies absolute complete intelligence penetration of all of the terrorist operations. It says right here, bin Laden. This note was sealed. The Canadian government admits under oath in court that Vreeland wrote the letter on August 11th or 12th. They don't know because they didn't date it at the time. But that he had no access to it, no custody of it. It was sealed in jail property, that he couldn't touch it. They opened it on September the 14th. That fact is not disputed. Now, what the Navy is saying is that Delmert Mike Vreeland was discharged as a seaman recruit after 4 months in the Navy in 1986. Unsatisfactory performance. So his lawyers subpoenaed his service record. They got back 1,200 pages. How long does it take you to accumulate a 1,200-page service record? The dates have been cut out. There's white out. There's liquid. They were so rushed they couldn't figure it out. And yet they insist that the guy was discharged from the Navy. And a funny thing happened on January 10th of this year. His lawyers, Rocco Galati and Paul Slansky, in one of the boldest moves I've ever seen, January 10th, the Navy's swearing under oath this guy was a seaman recruit. So they got on a speakerphone in court with the court reporter and speakerphone, dialed 411, said, I'd like the number for the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. They got it on the speakerphone. The court reporter's typing away. They get the Pentagon operator on the phone. I say, we're trying to locate a naval officer, Lieutenant Delmert Vreeland. We don't have his number. Hold on a minute. Oh, I've got him. Lieutenant Vreeland, office number such and such, and here's his phone number. The reason why is they'd taken down the computerized control system after the crash. And they'd reverted to the old system from which he had not been purged. Open court! So, Vreeland's story is, my God, well, you know, I was going to Russia, and he's still trying to avoid revealing top secret information by saying I was sent to gather information on Star Wars and some BS, which he's doing so that he doesn't get instantly killed, because the U.S. is trying to extradite him here, and he knows that he's going to be murdered the moment he gets back in U.S. soil. He's fighting to stay in Canada as a refugee. By the way, here's a story from the Toronto Star on that, which covered it briefly. That just confirms what I told you as far as the opening of the letter. Vreeland came across information he wasn't supposed to get while he was in Moscow. When you have intelligence operatives running around, he had a per diem of 19,000 a day. That was his Pentagon per diem. In other words, these guys handle lots of money. And the Pentagon or all intelligence agencies always build in credit card fraud mechanisms so that if the guy ever crosses a line, they can get him arrested anytime they ever want to. That's how they control them. So he was arrested on credit card fraud charges for his own credit card. And that's why the government's trying to extradite him back to the States, because he had come across the evidence of September the 11th. Summer 2001, Russian intelligence notifies the CIA that 25 terrorist pilots have been specifically training for suicide missions. This is reported by the Russian press and translated for me by one of my sources, who was a former CIA case officer. It was from Izvestia, and it clearly says 25 suicide pilots training. Russian intelligence was telling us. I mean, if we knew this, if the world press knew this, what did our intelligence services with a $30 billion budget know? I mean, all of us could have figured out what was going on at the World Trade Center. Let's continue. August 2001, Vladimir Putin orders Russian intelligence to warn U.S. government in the strongest possible terms of imminent attacks on airports and government buildings. I saw it, MSNBC, September 15th. September 3rd through 10th, MSNBC reports on September 16th that a caller to the Cayman Islands talk show gave several warnings of an imminent attack on the U.S. by bin Laden. Now, get this one. September 1 through 10th. In an exercise called Operation Swift Sword, planned for 4 years, 23,000 British troops are already steaming toward Oman before the first plane ever hits the World Trade Center. There was a slight hiccup in the deployment, but it was a 4-year plan. All you military vets know that you don't make those kind of deployments after a month. The military don't move that fast. They'd planned for 4 years. It was the largest British armada to set sail since the Falkland Islands War. Oman, by the way, is right next to Pakistan, to Iran, to Saudi Arabia. It's central to all operations in the region. At the same time, two U.S. aircraft carrier battle groups are rendezvousing, they're rotating what they call it, right off the Pakistani coast. That's not a normal deployment. It just happened to be there. Aw, shucks. But at the same time also, 17,000 U.S. troops joined more than 23,000 NATO troops in Egypt for Operation Bright Star. All of these forces are in place before the first plane hits the World Trade Center. Sources, The Guardian, CNN, Fox, The Observer, an international law professor, a very brave guy, Francis Boyle at the University of Illinois, was outraged. September 7th, 2001, Florida Governor Jeb Bush signs a 2-year emergency executive order number 01261, making new provisions for the Florida National Guard to assist law enforcement and emergency management personnel. Two words he adds to the new executive order on September 7th, or acts of terrorism. That's 4 days before the attacks. September 6th and 7th, 2001. Now, if I didn't have you yet, and if you weren't mad, you're going to be. 4,744 put options, bet that stock prices will fall dramatically, are purchased on United Airlines as opposed to only 396 call options. That's a bet the stock will go up. Highly abnormal. That trade level is about 600 to 700% above normal. Let's bear in mind also that some 4,000 to 5,000 put options were placed on American Airlines on September the 10th, one day before the attack. No other airlines had any other similar trading patterns. Reuters issued a story, September 10th, airline stocks poised for takeoff. The 4,744 put options on United Airlines were purchased through the investment bank A.B. Brown, Alex Brown, Deutsche Bank, that was headed until 1998 by the man who is currently the executive director of the Central Intelligence Agency. And I have written in a number of previous articles that the CIA, the Mossad, British intelligence, using very sophisticated software called Promise, P-R-O-M-I-S, monitor all stock trading in real time. September 10th, 4,516 put options are purchased on American Airlines compared to 748 call options. September 6th through 11th, no other airlines show any similar trading patterns to those experienced by UAL and American. The put option purchases on both airlines were 600% above normal. Highly abnormal levels of put options are purchased on major reinsurance companies. AXA Reinsurance, Munich Re, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley were also hit heavily in the World Trade Center attacks. My source for this was this report, dated September 23rd, 12 days after the attacks, from the Herzliya Institute, International Policy Institute for Counterterrorism in Herzliya, Israel. It's the Mossad. It's the Mossad. And I read that they had found out that the trades were made through Alex Brown, and I said, holy smokes, they know that the U.S. government committed these attacks or, you know, set them up and allowed them to happen. They're leaking that information. But this was backed up. Clearly somebody knew the attacks were going to take place. Now, one of the questions I'm asked most often is, well, Mike, you got to tell us who made the trades. And the answer is, I can't. Trades of brokers are as protected as medical records. I can't go find out who bought them and who sold them. Banking secrecy laws. The only people who can find out are the FBI, the SEC, the Department of Justice, and Congress. And they haven't lifted a finger to find out who made those trades. Do you think they have something to hide? Could be. Let's go on with the timeline. Come down to September 11th. General Mahmoud Ahmad of the ISI, that's the guy who wired the money to Mohammed Atta, is actually in Washington, D.C. on the day of September the 11th. He's not at the Pentagon. He happens to be meeting off campus with a bunch of military officers, probably to discuss war plans. September the 11th, the day of the attacks, employees of Odigo Inc. in Israel, one of the world's largest instant messaging companies with offices in New York, receives threat warnings of an imminent attack on the World Trade Center less than 2 hours before the first plane hits. Guess where the Odigo offices are? They're in the city of Herzliya, Israel. They immediately notify the Mossad, who immediately sends the warning bells to CIA and the Pentagon. 2 hours before the attacks. Sources for that, CNN's Daniel Seberg, 92801, News Bites, Brian McWilliams, 92701, and Haaretz, the Israeli paper, 92601. September 11th, from 8:15 a.m. until 9:05 a.m., with it widely known within the FAA and the U.S. military that four airliners have been simultaneously hijacked, an event which has never before occurred in world or American history. Not a single Air Force plane is scrambled. Now, there is a fabulous researcher named Jared Israel, whose website is www.tenc.net, the Emperor's New Clothes, who pulled the FAA manuals, who pulled the U.S. Air Force manuals. And what he found out is something very clear. For more than 25 years, it has been standard FAA and U.S. Air Force policy the moment any airplane under FAA control goes off course, deviates from flight plan, loses transponder control, your pilots know that you got to push a little button that identifies you on the radar screen, or loses radio contact, that fighter aircraft must be scrambled to intercept. Not shoot it down, just go fly up alongside of it and see what's going on. Standard FAA procedure that has been followed in every case since 1974, 75, 76. And yet some 70 minutes after the first plane hits the World Trade Center, you have Vice President Cheney on television telling you, we just didn't know what to do, and the president wasn't there to scramble the airplanes. The only way that fighters could not have been scrambled on September 11th was if the National Command Authority, the President, the Vice President, Secretary of Defense, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, had ordered the fighters to stand down. And you believe that they got away with this? What's worse is Jared has gone to the Andrews Air Force Base website, which has been changed since September the 11th. I used to work outside of Andrews Air Force Base. I saw F-16s, F-15s. I'm an Air Force brat. F-18s taken off all the time. You read the site now and it says, well, we maintain Air National Guard and Reserve squadrons, implying that there were no pilots on the base. Yet pre-September 11th, the website said, we maintain Air National Guard Reserve combat squadrons in the highest state of readiness. They call it ready response. What's ready response mean? You got your pilots in jumpsuits, they're gassed, you go hop in the plane and you take off. Air Force pilots regularly rotate on TDY, temporary duty, through these pilots. Andrews Air Force Base is the home of Air Force One. You think they wouldn't have fighters there? The whole website's been taken down. Jared preserved the original writings versus the post writings. Evidence of a conspiracy and a cover-up. They were flat lying. Now, let's go a little further. Okay, by the way, the sources for some of the scrambling on the Times, they waited 75 minutes. The sources are CNN, ABC, MSNBC, the LA Times, the New York Times. You just read their timelines. September 15th, the New York Times reports that Mayo Shattuck III has resigned effective immediately as the head of Alex Brown Deutsche Bank. The guy that handled the insider trades resigns the day after the attacks. He only had a $30 million contract. And I've since found out that he's very tight with John Poindexter. He's a classic insider. But he resigns. I've called the SEC about 10 times, or my writers have. And all they say is, we will neither confirm nor deny the existence of any investigation into insider trading around September the 11th. You call Congress and they say, we don't know anything about it. We're not going to hold hearings. October 10th, the Pakistani newspaper The Frontier Post reports that Ambassador Wendy Chamberlain has paid a call on the Pakistani oil minister. A previously abandoned Unocal pipeline from Turkmenistan across Afghanistan to the Pakistani coast for the purpose of selling oil and gas to China is now back on the table in view of recent geopolitical developments. They didn't wait long, did they? November 2001, the British newspaper The Independent runs a story headlined, Opium Farmers Rejoice at Taliban Defeat. November 25th, The Observer runs a story headlined, Victorious Warlords Set to Open Opium Floodgates. December 4th, convicted drug lord opium kingpin Ayub Afridi is recruited by the U.S. government. The guy's doing 7 years for heroin dealing. Now he's a U.S. government consultant. A Pakistani general, by the way, has quit and gone on Australian TV and said, listen, it's all about opium. What's wrong with you guys? Don't you idiots get it? You know, they're fighting over opium and oil. Pakistani general confirms publicly that war on terrorism is all about heroin. SBS television on 14 January in Australia. And on February 9th, not too long ago, Pakistani leader General Musharraf and Afghan leader Hamid Karzai announced their agreement to cooperate in all spheres of the pipeline construction across Afghanistan, and Pakistan even gives $10 million cash to Afghanistan to keep their administrators who are supervising the pipeline construction in place. Do you think anybody had foreknowledge?
Michael Rupert spoke for 4 hours in San Francisco on February 19, 2002. This show is the second half of the edited down production by Kelly Ramirez and Bonnie Faulkner. If you'd like more in-depth information, you can go to Michael C. Rupert's website, which is called FromTheWilderness.com. There you can order tapes and get also written information. I'm Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.